John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and Connor Newt here with you. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in senior sports reporter for the New York Post, Brian Costello. Hi, Brian. How are you? Thank you for joining us.
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me.
So, Brian, earlier this week, you were here in Nashville to catch up with Robert Saleh as he prepares, one, to face the Jets in week one of the NFL season, and two, he's preparing, of course, now that he has a second chance as an NFL head coach. You've covered the Jets for about 15 years, so you covered Robert Saleh's tenure in New York. When you were with Saleh earlier this week, did you sense anything different about him as he prepares for that second chance as an NFL head coach?
Yeah, I sense something different from the guy I met in 2021 when he was initially head coach with the Jets, where he's a lot more comfortable. He kind of knows the lay of the land now as a head coach. You know, I think everyone thinks they're ready to be a head coach when they're a good coordinator, and then they don't realize everything that comes with that job. Like, there's a lot that goes into that more than just coaching football. And I think Saleh wasn't really ready for that when he took over the Jets job. And I don't think many people are ready for that as first time coaches, but now he knows kind of what the job entails. And I think he's ready. You know, he's embracing that part of it. And I think he's excited to have a second chance.
What would you say, Brian, are valid criticisms of Saleh's Jets tenure, and how do you anticipate him approaching those areas this time based on your conversation with him the other day?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest problem for Saleh was quarterback here. That was really the biggest problem, so it's not really a criticism of him. You know, I think he's learned a little bit about having more experienced assistant coaches. Like, it stood out to me that he has Brian Daboll, now Gus Bradley, and John Fossil as his coordinators, right? Those are three guys who've been around for a long time. They've all been head coaches. Fossil even was an interim coach. When he was with the Jets, he had some very inexperienced assistant coaches especially at the beginning. He kind of adjusted as he went along, but I think he surrounded himself with better people this time. I think he's probably learned how to handle the media a little bit better. He wasn't great with that here at the beginning. I think he tried to make everyone happy here, and I think he realizes that's not going to happen. I do think he's calling the plays on the defense, right? I think that's what he said at the beginning of at his introductory press conference. He didn't call the defense here, and I always think that's kind of a weird thing for the coach, because they get the job because of X's and O's, right? Then you're not becoming a head coach if you're not a good coordinator. And we had it here with the Jets right now with Aaron Glenn. He didn't call the plays his first year. He's now calling the plays in his second year. I think it's a smart thing. Saleh didn't do that here. But he's a very good defensive coach. And to take that away seems kind of silly. So I think that's a big adjustment that I've seen from him.
Brian Costello is with us from the New York Post. He was here in Nashville earlier this week, had an exclusive sit-down with Robert Saleh. You also caught up, Brian, with Brian Daboll during your visit here to Nashville. Both men were, let's put it bluntly, chewed up and spit out by the New York market. What do you think of the pairing of Saleh and Daboll on the same staff?
Yeah, I mean, it's very funny from the New York perspective, right? These were two guys that were the head coaches here, the two teams for the last few years. I think it's a good pairing because I do think, you know, Saleh joked to me at one point. He said, you know, you could say, had I got the offense right with the Jets, it would have worked out better. And you could argue with Daboll, had they got the defense right, it would have worked out a lot better. So they kind of paired up now. And I think it's good, like I said, Saleh with calling the defense, he needs a strong offensive coordinator that he can sort of let them do his thing and not have to be so involved on that side of the ball. And Daboll, you know, before he was the Giants coach, he was the Bills offensive coordinator. And as covering the Jets, I saw him twice a year. He was a very good coordinator and he did a really good job up there. I know everyone goes, oh, he had Josh Allen, but even before he had Josh Allen, I can remember a game. he had Matt Barkley as his quarterback, and he really torched the Jets, and it was an impressive performance by him. So I think they're a good pairing for each other in that they have, you know, different strengths on the other side of the ball. I also think Dable can help Saleh because he's been the head coach. Gus Bradley, too. Like, they can help him through some of this stuff, and they can be sounding boards for him on head coaching decisions.
We're talking with Brian Costello, senior sports reporter for the New York Post. Now, Brian, in talking to Saleh, it seemed like he was very measured in how he spoke about the New York Jets and his experience there.
Yeah.
Did you ever get a sense of, hey, listen, yeah, I know you're speaking very carefully, but every place isn't like the Jets. And, you know, when he went off, I think he spent a small stint with Green Bay for a second before he went to San Fran. But he had to have understood that, like, every place isn't like the Jets. Did you get that sense from him?
Yeah, I think he knows that, and I think he's interested in the differences. He told me at one point that in Tennessee there's been a lot more football questions than he got in New York, because in New York it's a lot more about the drama, and there was a lot of drama here when Saleh was here, because obviously, like, they drafted Zach Wilson, you know, his first season, so there was a rookie quarterback here. Then he washed out in the second year, then they make the trade for Aaron Rodgers, and he gets hurt in the first game. There was a ton of drama with when Saleh was here with the Jets. So I think he's enjoying, so far, less drama in Tennessee. And I think, yeah, I think he knows it's a different market. And it's not, you know, I tell people, though, like, people talk about the New York media or the New York market. And D-Mace, you can attest to this.
Yeah.
You were here for a minute.
It's a hot minute.
In that it's different. Like, there's more of us than some markets. Although I saw a lot of people there when I was at practice in Tennessee. It's a little different, just the kind of the volume is a little louder. And also, like, you know, we have a Page Six at my newspaper. Like, if the head quarterback's going out for a dinner, it ends up in the paper the next day if he's eating in Manhattan. Like, I don't know, sure that happens in every market. So it's a little different that way. But the football aspect of it, to me, is the same in New York, is the same in Nashville, is the same in Jacksonville, is the same in Denver. Like, if you stink it up out there, the fans and the media are going to get on you. So it doesn't really matter where you are in that aspect. But so I think, you know, I think he knows that.
Now, do you get a sense of, in talking with Dable, some things he may have learned with his stint with the Giants? Because like Saleh, I think this is a critical time for him. If indeed he wants to be a head coach again, he has to prove that he can get an offense going and sustained.
Yeah, look, Dable was much closer to the vest talking to me than Saleh was. And I've known Dable a long time. He was a Jets assistant back in 2008. He was a quarterback coach when Brett Favre was here. So I've known him a long time, but I'm much closer to Saleh because I covered him as a head coach. So Dable was pretty guarded about the Giants. He didn't really want to talk about his time with the Giants, but, you know, he told me, like, you know, you learn lessons from every single place you've been. And I think he learned from the adversity that he had with the Giants. And he just had an experience with a new quarterback with Jackson Dart. So I think he's very excited to work with Cam Ward and try to implement some of the stuff that he did, you know, with Josh Allen. He was a young quarterback. And then last year with Jackson Dart, I think it was a good learning experience for Dable with the Giants, and just kind of it just didn't work out there.
Brian Costello is our guest from the New York Post. He's been writing articles about both Brian Dable and Robert Saleh, former New York head coaches, now, of course, here in Tennessee. Brian, I'm curious. I gave my perspective on the New York media, having grown up there when I was very young, but get a taste of it. This was before social media and all those things.
Yeah.
But, you know, just the Bronx Zoo and all those things, that there's so much great history there of how it evolved to where it is today. But if you were to advise, you know, someone, of how would you deal with the New York media and the drama? What are some of the things that are do's and what are don'ts? Because we were reading things about Saleh, about he was kind of, you know, chasing it a little bit, going after some people, saying, hey, why are you writing this or that? Like, what's the best way to do it? Ignore it, or is it better to engage?
A little bit of both. Like, I think you have to be yourself, number one. I think the biggest mistake I've seen guys make here is they come here and they try to act like Bill Belichick, or they try to act like Bill Parcells, or they try to act like whoever their mentor is, right? And I think you have to really be yourself. I do think developing a relationship with the media is smart and good, but you can't get caught up on every single thing that's written about you. Like, you'll drive yourself crazy. Like, you've got to turn the noise off and not listen to everything that's said or written about you here, because it's a lot. And, you know, like, whether it's the print media or the talk radio stations, and like, we have back pages where like you could end up in a clown suit, stuff like that. Like, there's some crazy stuff here. So you can't get too bogged down on it, but I do think it's important. You know, as a beat writer, I think it's a good idea to have a relationship rather than not have a relationship with people that cover your team every day. And I think the new challenge for guys is to understand the differences in the jobs, right? Like, there's a lot of people who are content creators now, and they do a great job with that stuff, but they do a different job than I do, that I'm there every day. And so I think coaches need to recognize that too. But really the biggest thing is be yourself and be as honest as you can be. You know, sometimes you can't tell the truth, but don't lie. Just don't answer the question if you can't tell the truth.
What do you think is fair in evaluating Robert Saleh, given Zach Wilson in particular? Because you mentioned Rodgers, but they had to go back to Zach Wilson that first year where he got hurt so early in the season. And Zach Wilson, you know, the numbers are just so low, and he hasn't shown any signs of doing any better anywhere else. Yep. But, you know, how you watched it week to week, right? How would you evaluate what's fair and where do you think they could have been better?
It's really hard. It's really hard because he did not have one season of good quarterback play. There wasn't one. Zach, like, I've covered obviously a lot of different rookie quarterbacks with the Jets, as it's been well established how many guys they've drafted and stuff through the years. Zach, like, you could tell there was never a moment where I thought Zach Wilson was the answer for this team. So he really didn't have a lot of good moments. And then, you know, you would have loved to have seen Saleh get a season with Rodgers. The first year he gets hurt, the second season Saleh gets fired 5 games in, when Rodgers was kind of coming back from the Achilles injury. It wasn't himself right away. So it's hard to evaluate, but I tell you this, guys, he can coach defense. Like, there's no question about that. And what he did defensively here was really impressive. They really didn't have good players his first year. They struggled, but he built that defense. And he's good at finding guys who other teams give up on and getting there. Like, he got Quincy Williams, was an all-pro here, linebacker, who the Jaguars cut. And they claimed him off waivers, and he can coach linebackers really, really well. You know, Fred Warner in San Francisco, obviously, Fred Warner wasn't a top 10 pick or anything. Like, Saleh developed him. And here they had Quincy Williams, Jamie Sherwood played well under him. So he coached defense. The key for him is, right, like, how good is Cam Ward going to be? And what's Dable going to get out of him? I wouldn't worry about the defensive side of the ball. He's got to figure out now how to be the head coach. It's not like he's tunnel vision just on defense, because I've covered that before here, where one guy's just focused on one side of the ball. He was pretty good at seeing both sides of it, but he just needs some success offensively, and I think he can be a successful head coach.
Why do you think that the Jets pulled the plug when they did in the middle of the season when they let him go?
I think Woody Johnson had enough of Robert Saleh. Just the dynamics of this. So you guys know, like, Woody Johnson was the ambassador to the United Kingdom in Donald Trump's first term. So he wasn't here when Saleh was hired. Saleh was hired in January of 21 here. That was Woody Johnson actually was on a plane coming back to the United States the day of Robert Saleh's press conference. So Woody's brother, Christopher, hired Robert Saleh. I'm sure Woody was somewhat involved, but he wasn't in the interviews. It wasn't his guy. So it was never his guy. I don't think Woody and Saleh really ever got along. And I think he just got tired of them and he got frustrated. They lost a game in the rain to the Denver Broncos at home on a missed field goal. And then they lost in England to the Vikings that game. And I think Woody just had enough and pulled the plug. But in my opinion, it was too soon. Like, I think he should have given Saleh that whole year to see what he could have gotten with a healthy Aaron Rodgers, and it didn't work. The team went 5-12 after that season. So it wasn't a good decision in my opinion. But I think they just did not. It was just a personality clash there, guys. And I think Woody Johnson had just had enough at that point.
Brian Costello, senior sports reporter for the New York Post, has been our guest on DeMace, Vingan, and Donick. I highly recommend all of Brian's stories from here in Nashville. You can read them at nypost.com. Brian, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me, guys. Mm-hmm.
615-737-1025. We'll react to what Brian had to say. You can as well. 615-737-1025. Tomorrow on 102.5 The Game, catch the Arena Crown Championship as the Nashville Cats take on the Albany Firebirds at F&M Bank Arena. Kickoff, easy for me to say, is at 3 p.m. and coverage will begin at 2:30 p.m. right here only on 102.5 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. All right, I've decided retroactively to give the two of you credit for Dawson's Creek, even though Derek Mason said Dawson's Lake. So you're 2 for 2 on themes from 2000s teen dramas. Gavin DeGraw.
Okay, I need some hints on this show.
I can't.
Because I know the song. So I know right around when this song was out. But I need a clue for the show.
It's not Clueless.
It's not Clueless. It's
Clueless.
Well, Clueless had.
Did they have a show to go with the movie? Movie's more famous.
Clueless, it was a show.
It was a show.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good show.
No.
But it was a show. Clueless is the best. I love that movie so
that
much.
That wasn't 90210.
No, because that's not a 2000s. Yeah, that's not 2000s.
Yeah. That's 90s.
Did it bleed into the 2000s?
I don't think so. It was probably pretty close,
I don't think it quite made it to the
2000s.
So,
all right, can we have actor, actress?
Chad Michael Murray.
That's not helping me.
Chad Michael Murray was on this show. Who else was on this show?
So we had Dawson's Creek.
Sophia Bush was on the show.
That's what you said when you saw
it. Wait, Chad Michael Murray was in Dawson's Creek, wasn't he?
No, yeah. that was not Chad Michael Murray.
No?
No, you're thinking of the dude from the Mighty Ducks movies was in Dawson's Creek. What's his name? I can't remember it off the top of my head. Joshua Jackson.
Well, yeah, but no, I think Chad Michael Murray might have made an appearance later.
It appears he did.
Yes.
So Chad Michael Murray was a star on the show.
Was he in the OC?
I don't know. Do you have a guess?
I don't.
No.
The answer is One Tree Hill.
One Tree Hill.
I never watched that.
One Tree
ever.
Hill.
I never watched it. I should have just thrown that out there just as a...
Oh, 2 for 3. You guys are doing okay. Two out of three ain't bad. Greg Roberts says One Tree Hill. Good for you, Greg.
Good 0 call. For 3 on
Show. You played in Riverdale,
well,
too.
This predates your existence. You don't get to play.
Damn.
Oh, wow. Riverdale.
By the way, be listening at the top of the hour. For Ask D-Mace, we do have a prize associated with Ask D-Mace. The best question for Derek Mason, as chosen by Derek Mason, the person who asks that question will receive a 4-pack of tickets to PBR Stampede Days at Bridgestone Arena next weekend. So if you want those 4-pack of tickets to PBR Stampede Days next weekend, participate in Ask D-Mace. You can start texting your questions now, 615-737-1025. We appreciate Brian Costello, senior sports reporter from the New York Post, for joining us in the previous segment. He was in town earlier this week, had a sit-down exclusive interview with Robert Saleh. Of course, he wrote about it for the New York Post. And I thought it was a really interesting read, which is why I wanted to have Brian on the show, because we've talked so much, right, about what's Robert Saleh going to do this time to make sure what happened in New York doesn't happen here. It's one thing for us to speculate on it. It's another thing to actually hear from someone, to read someone who was there for the Robert Saleh experience in New York. For example, one of the things Brian Costello mentioned in the story is that one thing Saleh did differently this time is he actively chose to surround himself with players who know his system. He told Costello that when he came to the Jets, he deliberately stayed away from guys he knew. And it was actually Rex Ryan, former Jets coach as well, who told Saleh that he should bring in players that already know his system. And we've seen that. A lot of Jets players.
And Giants players
in the case of Brian Daboll on the roster. Willie, what stood out to you, one, reading the story by Brian Costello and then talking to him just now?
I thought both Daboll and Saleh were careful not to say anything that was going to have people chirping about it up in New York, right? I think they knew better than that. It's time to just kind of lay low and just do your thing here and then see what happens. Because we know week one when they play the Jets, you're not going to be able to avoid it, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be a huge topic up there. So why get started now? I didn't know that it was Woody Johnson's brother that hired. I didn't know that. But that had to be something that made it even more difficult, because what I tried to do with my questions was put yourself with somebody that was watching it every day, like Costello was, and to say, could Vince Lombardi have won with Zach Wilson as your quarterback? I don't think so. Like, name me a coach that could have won under those circumstances. Zach Wilson, the quarterback. Then you sign Aaron Rodgers. He gets hurt on the fourth play. And you're back to Zach Wilson, mm-hmm. who's horrible. I mean, he is of the bus, other than Jamarcus Russell, who never played. Zach Wilson might be the worst statistical quarterback of the guys who were drafted in the top three or four picks, right? I mean, I don't think you could dispute it. But that had to make his job impossible.
Yeah, and that's why I asked Brian, you know, in regards to, did he really, like, understand? Because, again, he was trying to be as careful as possible in his interviews. And I understand, you don't want to, regardless of how the situation went, this is a small fraternity, and you don't want to go around burning bridges with owners or anybody else. You just sort of kind of go about your way, and hopefully, you know, things don't start to come out that then forces you to make a comment here or there. But just how, you know, that's why I look at it now. And when you hear some of the comments from writers or podcast people or people that have shows in New York and how bad they get on Saleh, it's like, do y'all even understand how bad that team was? And if you did, why are you pointing so much of the anger at Saleh? Whereas the guy that has been the linchpin in all of this has been the owner, and he's still there. So you just wonder through it all, how is he going to, you know, approach this? And we talked about this as well, you know, smoothing out some of the rough edges with this coaching, having a more experienced coaching staff, because he made the mistake like Callahan. You know, hiring first-time guys or guys that hadn't been on the job for a long time. And it didn't work well for Saleh. It didn't work well for Callahan. This go-around, he has added a lot of experience. And I think with that experience, it takes a little bit of the stress off of him, because you know whatever you put in the hands of these other guys, they're in capable hands because they've been there before.
Another thing that Brian Costello wrote in his story, he happened to be here on Tuesday when Jeffrey Simmons got kicked out of practice by Robert Saleh, and Costello wrote, quote, on Tuesday, Saleh showed a disciplinarian side that some Jets fans might argue he did not show enough with the Jets.
I found that very interesting.
He threw Simmons, the all-pro defensive tackle, out of practice after Simmons threw a punch. So he just happened to be here when that happened, and according to Costello, Jets fans thought maybe Saleh wasn't enough of a disciplinarian in New York.
That's what we talked about, the whole Aaron Rodgers thing, and, you know, Aaron Rodgers sort of being hired or sort of being signed as the offensive guy. Like, he's his guy.
And you got to bring in all
exactly,
my people.
Exactly, you got to bring in all my people, and you got to do this. And every time you saw Saleh trying to answer a question about Aaron Rodgers, he really couldn't answer it because it was like, I have no power in this.
He was in a tough spot.
Yeah.
But there was that whole summer where Aaron Rodgers was just doing his own thing. He was not showing up to the OTAs, and Robert Saleh had to answer all of the questions. And you could tell he was like, "What do you want me to say? I can't tell the guy."
Aaron Rodgers
has to be.
Aaron Rodgers was in Egypt. Yeah. That was what it was. He was in Egypt during mandatory. I think it was maybe during mandatory minicamp or something like that.
And they didn't get the message straight from either side, mm-hmm. right? Aaron Rodgers didn't say anything, and Saleh was. I remember him. I think not really sure what the message was going to be. Mm-hmm. Did you know he wasn't going to be here? It's like cryptic of whether
he
talked
knew
about
or not.
It. Yeah, it was really awkward.
And that's one of those situations where, you know, it's made to feel as if you don't have no control over your team whatsoever. And you got to fault Aaron Rodgers too, because I'm sure he took advantage of that. And when you see your star player, you know, sort of, you know, shunning you in a sense, what do you think everybody else is going to do? You know, it seemed like that locker room and that building just got kind of sideways after that whole Aaron Rodgers debacle.
And of course, just because Robert Saleh is trying to do things differently in Tennessee, he's hired an experienced staff. Maybe he's showing a little bit more of a disciplinarian side. Maybe he's going to be more careful about what he says and developing relationships with the reporters around the team. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to translate into more wins. Look, Robert Saleh could still struggle as head coach of the Tennessee Titans. He could still have a losing record. But it appears that he's really making an effort to make sure that the same things that did not help him in New York will not be the reasons why he fails in Tennessee. He might still fail in Tennessee, but he's still at least he's trying to not fall into the same traps.
And I think it's clear to say, I think we would all agree that Brian Callahan fell into a lot of traps.
Yes.
But
yes.
Before things went south, like even during the time, I think you look back on it, I think he tried too hard to answer all of the questions and go into great detail, and he probably said some things that didn't come across very well. I think Saleh's done a good job so far of being to the point, open, friendly. And look, they haven't had, knock on wood, they haven't had adversity yet, right? We just talked about the story yesterday. His last team, the 49ers, have 20 guys that can't practice already. The Titans haven't had that yet. It's going to happen, right? Whether it happens in training camp or when they start losing a couple games, that's when it's going to be tested. That's when people will start asking the questions, did they hire the right guy? And that's when I think you find out how much he's learned. But it does look like he's learned a lot from the first go-round.
It will start in week one. Jets at Titans.
Playing the Jets, yeah.
Yes. If the Titans lose that game at home, I think we'll quickly learn how Robert Saleh is handling his second chance, because you can only imagine the reaction here and in New York.
And the Jets really aren't trying to win. Like they aren't going for it. Like you can tell they're sort of setting the table for getting
for
a quarterback in the next draft.
Right.
They clearly opted not to try to get a quarterback this year.
So
no offense to who's going to be taking snaps for them.
Geno Smith.
Yeah. I mean, when you bring he's been around the block.
Yeah.
Many times. Started in New York.
And back home. Yeah. Back home now.
Yes. 615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction to our conversation with Brian Costello of the New York Post. Again, I highly recommend the columns he wrote when he was here, both about Robert Saleh and Brian Daboll. You can read them at nypost.com, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, there is a team out there that has offered a bounty for a trading card. Really interesting. My question, when we get back, I'll tell you what the offer is. And I wonder if your favorite team offered this to you, if you would take it. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vinga. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, the game. All right. 2000s teen dramas. Round four. Bad Reputation. Joan Jett. Now, this show premiered in, I believe, 1999, but bled into 2000.
Oh.
Shrek.
It's Shrek.
It is in Shrek.
Ronda Rousey.
Judd Apatow, I believe, produced the show, created the show. A lot of famous actors debuted on this program, including Seth Rogen, Jason Segel, Linda Cardellini, among others.
I think I know it. Now I got to remember Freaks and Geeks.
Bingo!
I had to get the clues to get that.
But yes.
I didn't watch that.
Great show. Great show. All right, you guys are three for four.
It was critically acclaimed.
Yes, it didn't last very long, but it was.
So if it was critically acclaimed, it should have lasted longer.
No, it didn't hit.
It's a cult classic.
Classic. All right.
People learn to appreciate it more long after it was gone.
Okay.
Especially as Judd Apatow became very famous
And
produced so many funny movies. So, like the 40-year-old virgin, Superbad.
Oh, yeah. He's got a string of them now.
All of those. So, a couple of you did get Freaks and Geeks. Good job, guys. All right. So, I noticed this yesterday. The Dallas Mavericks are in search of a one-of-one trading card, a one-of-one Cooper Flagg debut patch autograph card. And they want it so badly, they are willing to give the following items to the current card holder. It is a proposed trade, so I believe there could be some negotiation. Ooh. If you have this card, this one-of-one Cooper Flagg debut patch autograph card, the Mavericks will give you this. 2 Mavericks season premium lower-level tickets for 32 years. Whoa. Cooper Flagg wears 32.
32
years. 32 wow. years. A Cooper-signed game-worn rookie jersey. A post-game photo with Cooper Flagg. A private photo shoot with the NBA Rookie of the Year trophy and Larry O'Brien championship trophy. A VIP tour of the Mavericks practice facility with a team meet and greet. Private basketball experience for up to 10 guests at American Airlines Center.
Whew.
And a road trip experience to see the Mavericks take on the Celtics, including round trip airfare, hotel accommodations, and game tickets. All of that can be yours if you have the card and you give it to the Mavericks.
Okay. I would go to my computer and tally up how much all of that stuff would cost. And then I would put a times, like 2 or 3, however that costs, times 2 or 3, and then we could start talking.
So for context, the Pittsburgh Pirates proposed a similar trade in 2024 with Paul Skeens. Same sort of card, one-of-one rookie debut patch autograph card. The fan would receive 2 Pirates season tickets behind home plate for the next 30 years and a meet and greet with Skeens. Even Skeens' girlfriend, Livy Dunn, offered a seat in her suite for a game. Mm. An 11-year-old from the L.A. area fetched the card but declined the deal and sold it at auction for $1.11 million.
Yeah, I'm going to see what I can get for that auction first before I do anything.
I think you could get more for a Cooper Flagg one-of-one debut rookie card.
I'm holding on to it for a little while longer. I'm putting it in a safe somewhere, and I'm holding on to it.
So if
how much more do you think? Because Skeens was pretty big.
Yeah.
I think Flagg could get you $1.5 million.
All right.
So I hold on to it for a minute.
Not terribly bigger, but that would be significant if that's true.
So if your favorite team offered you a similar deal for a rookie card, would you do it?
I think this is the essence of it, is am I a hardcore fan of that team?
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's the
stuff that the team is offering is valuable if you love the team.
And you live in Dallas, so you have access to
right. And there's no way of knowing whether the person is a Mavericks fan or a Duke fan or lives in Alaska or lives in Dallas, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I don't know, why are they thinking somebody would take that? Because what are the chances that the person who gets that card
lives in
Dallas, a Mavericks fan?
Or lives in Texas, for that matter.
Yeah. He could live in Dallas and not like the Mavericks.
Exactly. He could be a Houston Rocket fan for whatever.
I don't think they're offering enough. I think they would have to offer more.
Exactly. That's
Josh says there's also a $2 million bounty on it right now, too.
Ooh.
Does that mean like Boba Fett is combing the country to try to find it?
In the fine print on
the Mavericks.
If Boba
Fett knocks on my door, I'll know why. He's going to say, do you have the Cooper Flagg card?
I'd be more excited to meet Boba Fett than Cooper
Flagg.
Yeah,
I would.
On the Mavericks website.
Boba, come on in.
The fine print says the card's market value. The card's market value may exceed the market value of the experiences to be offered.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like,
you got to come to the table with
you
more.
You got to come to the table with a little bit more.
Josh chimes back in and says, ultimately, it'll go for around $3 million, he thinks.
I'll take that $3
million. Yeah. Even for someone who loves Cooper Flagg, I'm taking $3 million. But again, here is the proposal from the Dallas Mavericks for a one-of-one Cooper Flagg debut patch autograph card. 2 Mavericks season premium lower-level tickets for 32 years. 32 years! A Cooper Flagg signed game-worn rookie jersey, a post-game photo with Cooper Flagg, a private photo shoot with the NBA Rookie of the Year trophy and Larry O'Brien championship trophy, a VIP tour of the Mavericks practice facility with a team meet and greet, private basketball experience for up to 10 guests at American Airlines Center, a road trip experience to see the Mavericks take on the Celtics, including round trip airfare, hotel accommodation, and game tickets.
I also am a card collecting purist. Mm-hmm. I go back when I was a kid, my idea of card collecting is a lot different than what it's become, which is, you know, an asset, right? Mm-hmm. It's how much is this worth? Like, I come from the days of it was just a fun hobby to do.
To like trade.
Collect and trade and talk about the guys. And we handled the cards, which you can't do now. You have to, like, put it in a hermetically sealed
can't
thing.
Touch it.
Right. That took the fun out of it. So that's sad that this become that. Like, you're trying to find the person that found that and not have that person cash it in. And that's the immediate thing you go to. What's the value of this versus the value of that? But unless I was a hardcore Dallas Mavericks fan that just absolutely loved having season tickets, there's no way they're not going to get that card from that.
They're
not going to get it.
This website called SoulRetriever.com says, depending on the seats, estimates range from $350,000 to $600,000 for the total value of the offer that the Mavericks have. However, there are reportedly offers for the flag card from private collectors that already surpass the $1.1 million mark set by the Skeens card, with some experts speculating that it could go for as much as $5 million at the public auction. With those kinds of offers being thrown around, the Mavs offer seems pithy and almost insulting by comparison.
Well, why do they want it so bad?
Exactly.
Maybe Cooper wants it. Maybe he wants it back.
Well, then
maybe they want to display it.
Well, Cooper called me, and you can buy it from me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need the other stuff. If you pay me the money it's going to be worth, I can do that on my own and still have a bunch of money, you know, invested. So, you know, give me money.
There's probably an over 95% chance that the holder of the card
is not a Mavericks
fan. Exactly. Or a Cooper Flag fan.
B-Man says, do we know if anyone has pulled the card yet? I do not know that. Josh, who is our resident card collector, I suppose, says, I've watched some people spend more than $100,000 on just the Cooper Flag spot and a big break on Fanatics Live. They did not hit the card in that break.
My thing is, and I know that it's probably more, you know, a little bit more complex than this, but if you have a guy like Cooper Flagg, first overall pick, shouldn't he get his, like, first, his own card? Like, here, we're going to give this card to you. A one-of-one of you and your rookie, this is your card to keep. And then kind of go from there. Because ultimately, that's what the Dallas Mavericks wants to do, get this rare card so they can then hold it and put it in their Hall of Fame or whatever. Why didn't, you know, the card companies, whoever, you know, get with the NBA and say, hey, listen, we're going to make one card of each individual, like one special card of each individual draft pick. Or if you just want to say the lottery guys, we're going to make one special card that nobody else will have. And that'll be theirs.
I'm curious, too, of how you look at it long term. Is it right? Because Cooper, part of the game that people would play a lot in the collection world for baseball, like the rookie card of a certain guy. There are guys that peak early, right? They might be the rookie of the year. They might have a couple of great seasons early in their career. And then for one reason or another, injuries, et cetera, they're not as good. And the stock of the card goes down. So it also would, like, Paul Skeens right now is in a little bit of a lull. He's not pitching very well.
His card probably wouldn't be worth $1.11 million
now. I think there's a lot of reason to believe he'll bounce back, but you never know.
People would pay that to sit next to Livy Dunn for a game, though. Am I right, Connor Newt?
Don't look at me. What are you doing?
She's popular in your age bracket.
Yeah, but that's weird.
She came up way short on a
married man to ask me that. Like,
Oh, my goodness.
Let's see. B-Man says, how much does Willie's card cost in the Vandy days?
The Vandy days? There is a Vanderbilt NIT card. Mm-hmm. I don't think I have an individual Vanderbilt card. There's a team photo of the NIT champions. I do have some minor league baseball cards.
With your name misspelled, if I
A couple of them are spelled right, a couple of them not spelled right. I think I'm 2 out of 4 on correct spelling.
B-Man also wants to know correctly. If Willie has a basketball card.
I don't have a basketball card. There's a Fleer Vanderbilt team card, 1990 NIT champions.
Taylor says, 2 seats times 41 games times 32 seasons, 2,624 tickets. If you sell the tickets for $150 each, that's $393,000. Give me the millies.
Exactly. Give me the money. I love you, Dallas, but give me the money.
Yeah, even me, you know, I love Cooper Flagg. Exactly. I'm taking the money. I'm taking the money. Gunner says, imagine if a Carolina fan got it, said screw this guy and burned it or just trashed it. I'm going to bite my tongue on this one.
That would be crazy.
I'm going to bite my tongue on this one. I'm going to take the high road on this one. Also, this happened when I was on vacation, so I haven't been able to react to it, the whole Michael Lombardi thing. I did see that, and I'm like, oh, what a shame.
I'm sure you did.
Oh, that's just it's just terrible what's happening to North Carolina football. It's just a shame.
You shed some tears, didn't you? Yes, you did.
But, I mean, look, it's amazing how much these trading cards go for. It's just a completely different thing than when I'm sure you guys were growing up mm-hmm. and collecting cards. It's just the amount of money that these things go for is just insane.
There was a card that my barber had, and I know you're saying, barber, you ain't got no hair. Well, my beard, okay? Just get it edged up and everything.
Back in the day.
You know, still do it. But he had a card, and he has own shop. So what he does is pull out cards, and when kids come in there, because he's old school, he's like, man, go in there and grab some cards. You know, get some baseball cards and football cards, basketball cards. And that's cool because, like you said, kids are not – like they used to be when it comes to cards and at least sports cards and trading and stuff like that. So he said he gave him by accident, because there's not many of these, I think it was a rookie Magic Johnson card, but it had Irving Magic Johnson on it.
Oh, wow.
Yes. He said he gave it away. He said, oh, oops. My goodness. Yeah. Everybody was ragging him in the barbershop. Like, dude, how can you give that one away? Yeah. Magic didn't have his full name on cards. It was really his rookie season. After that, it was just Magic Johnson. It was not many with Irving Magic Johnson.
I mean,
at least not rookie. You know, after rookie year.
When I was younger, I collected Pokemon cards, and some of those cards went for a ton of money. I think famously, Logan Paul paid like $1 million for a Charizard card or something like that for you Pokemon fans out there. But it is amazing to me how much these cards go for. So. Good luck to the Dallas Mavericks, I suppose. We'll see if somebody is willing to take them up on their offer, but I'm not sure. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Welcome in Justin. Justin, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I heard y'all talking about the flag. The flag card will probably go for $3 to $5 million. I do shows all over the Southeast. The card market now is unprecedented. How hot and how much money is moving around. Nashville has one of the largest shows in the country. Usually there's three times a year. There's about 1,400 tables show at the fairground.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. Well, thank you, Justin.
I wouldn't have thought that.
Do you think, or is he still there?
He's gone.
I would be curious, you know, what got him into it and what he thinks about that part of it. Because it was always to me about, it would spark discussion. It got you interested in these players. Like, oh, I want to see that guy play. Like, what did he hit last year? Oh, this guy, he's only 5'6". You know, there's the little things that you learn by reading the cards. It was essential for me.
And then you got some bubble
gum. Growing up. And the gum.
You got some gum.
Mm-hmm.
And you got the gum. Stale gum.
Yes, it was very
stale. But gum nonetheless.
But you chewed it.
Gum nonetheless. 615-737-1025. All right, it's Friday. It's almost 5 o'clock. It's time for Ask D-Mace. And I'm telling you, you're going to want to text us a question for Derek at 615-737-1025. Because if you do, and you ask a question that Derek Mason likes above all else, you will win a 4-pack of tickets to PBR Stampede Days at Bridgestone Arena either next Friday, August 14th, or next Sunday, August 16th. So if you want a 4-pack of tickets to PBR Stampede Days, text in right now, 615-737-1025, with your question for Derek Mason. Ask D-Mace coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.